Support for the Blueprint podcast comes from the SANS Institute. Since the debut of Sec 450, we've always had students interested in a matching course covering the management and leadership aspects of running a SOC. If you like the topics in this podcast and would like to learn more about Blue Team leadership and management, check out the new Management 551, Building and Leading Security Operations Centers. This new course is designed for security team leaders looking to build, grow, and operate a security operations center with peak efficiency, and it's a hands-on technical leadership course that takes you through everything from scoping threat groups to use case creation and organization, threat hunting, planning, SOC maturity and detection assessment, and much, much more. Check out the course syllabus, labs, and a free demo at sansurl.com/551, and I hope to see you in class.
This is the Blueprint Podcast, bringing you the latest in cyber defense and security operations from top Blue Team leaders. Blueprint is brought to you by the SANS Institute and is hosted by SANS certified instructor John Hubbard. And now, here's your host, John Hubbard.
In this episode of Blueprint, we have guest John Hensinsky, Director of Operations at Expel. This episode, I think, is a real gem and points to the future of where security operations is going, both in terms of tools and in process. John's incredibly clear and well-researched thinking, defining what a SOC should be doing and how to measure it, is both a breath of fresh air and a job that sometimes seems impossible to measure and improve, and also a guiding way forward for many of us. Stay tuned for an awesome conversation about measuring and improving your SOC using methods pioneered in the manufacturing and reliability engineering industries, how John uses data science to measure and improve security operations, and much, much more today on the Blueprint Podcast. Welcome to the podcast, everyone. Today we have John Hensinsky, Director of Operations at Expel. I ran into John in some mutual discussions on Twitter, and I've been seeing blog posts and other stuff throughout the years, and can tell he's a person that's definitely really lived the real Blue Team life and has those battle scars, kind of seen it all, and also has a really clear and interesting way of breaking down the process and the measurements for a SOC, and I really like how he kind of approaches this stuff. So I knew I wanted to have him on the podcast to talk about some of that stuff. So welcome to the podcast, John.
Thanks, John. Great to be here.
So to start off, give us a little bit of information about your background and your current role and what kind of your day-to-day work is like.
Yeah, sure. So in my current role, I'm Director of Operations at Expel. What's Expel? We are an MDR, or a SOC as a service. What makes us just a little bit different is we don't actually like ship an agent or deploy technology. We integrate with the tech that our customers have. So basically, we connect up to that technology, consume the data, try and make sense of it. And then really our value proposition is we provide answers, not alerts. So you've got all these vendor alerts, you don't know what to do with it. We, with a mixture of technology, people, and process, we try to make sense of it all and provide our customers answers. So that's Expel in a nutshell. My background, I've been in security operations for over a decade. So the easiest way to think about it is I know what like a really good SOC looks like and maybe a SOC that, you know, not so great, if you will. So one of the things that's near and dear to my heart is this notion of SOC analyst burnout, alert fatigue. One of my strong beliefs, and we'll probably chat about this, John, is like, I think a SOC can be a great place to work, but you got to do it right. Like, if you do it wrong, it's not going to be a very great place to work, and there's going to be a lot of burnout as well. So I've worked in many SOCs, spent some time at Fire. I managed defense doing MDR there as well. So most of my background is doing SOC work, both in public and private sectors.
Awesome. Yeah, I definitely want to touch on the burnout thing. Before we get into that and leading into that, maybe one of the things that I was really interested in, from what I've seen, you take a very kind of forward thinking, you know, new tools and technology, maybe also SRE style, like thinking approach to security operations, which I think is really, unique, I guess. I don't see a whole lot of people thinking about the problem like that. And so I wanted to start off kind of high level and just ask you, like, how do you conceptualize something as big as a SOC and say, like, this is what we're doing, these are the things that matter, and what do you think about measuring to start to wrap your head around that sort of a problem?
Yeah, it's a really good question. In terms of like my approach was a start with strategy. And I'll use my day job as an example because that's the most relevant. And I think about what we want to accomplish. Well, we're integrating with all this technology. We're consuming, at this point, hundreds of millions of vendor alerts a day. And when I think about a really good security operations experience, either as a vendor or an internal security program, what does that mean? Well, you want to move quickly. There's a lot of latency sensitivity within security operations. What I mean by that is like, hey, if you have a high severity alert for a web shell being accessed and it sits there for a couple of days, probably not where you want to be. And if you have an alert that sits in the queue for a long time and it takes you 12 to 24 hours to find it and figure out how to remediate, that's probably also not where you want to be. And the way I also think about security operations is it's like a system. It's a living system. You've got work that enters the system. You've got latency sensitivity. But there's also this concept of throughput, like how quickly can work move across the system as well. And so when we think about a SOC and measurements, it's start with strategy and actually like write it down. And what I mean by that is like define what good looks like. So when I think about SOC strategies, the number one thing that I would recommend is have a firm handle on capacity. Like what's capacity? Like, well, how many alerts are going to show up today and how many analysts do you have to look at those things? And fun fact, if you don't know what your capacity is, you're likely oversubscribed and you're likely going to experience burnout. So like the first thing I did when I, you know, changed from an IC individual contributor role to manager was we all work in Excel as investigators, timelining. But I put that down and said, okay, instead of using Excel to investigate activity, I'm going to write down my capacity model and figure out how much capacity I have available as well. And then the other thing that was part of my strategy was I want to improve service level objectives. What's a service level objective? Like how long are alerts going to wait before we pick them up for first action? And then the other thing I said is like, when we think of like a world-class SOC or MDR, is I have this line, it's kind of cheesy, but kind of not, is I want to respond faster than delivery pizza, like 30 minutes or less to go from alert to fix. And there's some other parts of that strategy. But when we have that strategy and we say, hey, team, this is where we're headed. And then we deploy a set of metrics and measurements to inform where we are in that journey. So we started with capacity, get your capacity model in place. And you're going to be wrong. You're going to have no idea what you're doing at first. And that's totally okay. I'm still figuring it out as well. And when we're thinking about SLO times, ask yourself, well, when alerts hit our SIM or whatever platform we're using, how long do they wait on average? And then when you think about your response times, how long does it take you as an organization or as a vendor to go from alert to fix and start deploying those measurements that will inform where you are? And then when you kind of review those metrics and measurements, you'll start to make adjustments to get closer to where you want to be. So that's super high level. That was the approach. Start with strategy, rally the team around that strategy, deploy a set of metrics and measurements to inform you where you are in the journey, but then be super transparent about that. Like, it's totally fine if our alert to fix times aren't great right now, but the starting point is figuring out where you are and then talking about as a team and organization what it's going to take to actually get there. So that's super high level, John.
Wonderful answer. There's a million places I'd love to go from
that.
The first thing I think that caught my eye that it chronologically makes sense, capacity planning, right? That's something that there is a fixed kind of pool of people that are working. And then there's like these dials you can turn, right? Like how sensitive do I want my alerts to be? How many alerts are we going to turn on and all of that? And so how do you take all of those variables and say like, do we have enough people? Like how do you factor all of that in and approach that problem?
It's a fantastic question. So the first step is in the capacity model is let's assume you're running a 24/7 SOC. And the first thing you're going to ask yourself is what's the minimum amount of people required to run a 24/7? It's likely 12, could be closer to 8 if you really want to be lean and mean. And then you've got 12 analysts probably broken out by shifts. So let's assume for the sake of simplicity, you have 2 to 3 people per shift. And fun fact, when you hire an analyst, you don't actually get 8 hours. Assume they work an 8-hour day. I assume 70% loading for every particular analyst. That means for every analyst, I'm not going to get 8 hours. I'm going to get like 5, maybe 4 hours because people breaks and things like that. You're not just going to just sit right in front of the console every specific day. And then the other thing you can start to do is understand how many hours you have available in a day. But then start to ask yourself, well, how many alerts are we going to have over the next 12 to 24 hour period? And then ask yourself, when those alerts hit the queue, how long is it going to take us to work those classes of alerts? And this is where it gets interesting. I'm maybe jumping ahead, but when we built this system at Expel, the way we built it was an alert hits the queue. You know, we've all been there. We're in our SIM, we're in our alert console. And what we like to do is optimize for triage. Basically, when an alert hits the queue, I actually don't want my analyst team to have to jump into the SIM in query logs. Grab a process listing. I want to optimize for triage, but then there's other class of alerts you may haven't optimized yet. And then you're going to move them to an investigation and do a whole bunch of work to figure out, was this good or was it not? And then, you know, a percentage of those will actually make it to a fully declared incident where you've got some remediation as well, so on and so forth. So bottom line, to get a starting point, understand how much capacity you have, and then start to break up the work that you do on a daily basis into like alerts? What are the triage decisions we made? Were there any alerts that required additional effort? What did those look like and what did you have to do? And then finally, on a typical day, how many incidents do we see? It's probably one, maybe two. On most days, there probably aren't security incidents if you're internal SOC, but then start to build those into your capacity model. Because then you could say, on a typical day, we've got, make up a number, 36 hours of analyst time. We'll look at 200 alerts. 70% will be triage, and those take about 5 minutes, and then extrapolate that out. We'll do about 10 investigations, which takes us about an hour, and maybe one to two security incidents. And then you can start to project and kind of think about where you're going as an organization as well. So I know that's super high level without having a Jupyter notebook or a spreadsheet up, but I'm doing the best I can here to kind of lay the framework here.
Yeah, certainly. One of the things that came to mind there in that answer is you said you assume about a 70%, you know, loading capability, you know, per person or whatever. With the whole like site reliability, you know, mindset and all that sort of thing, like I know with that, there's like what there should be and then what there is, right? In your mind, is there a goal like we should spend X percent of time on reactive whatever versus improvements? And how do you balance that kind of thing?
Oh, that's a great question. So probably being too candid, but like as my role of director of operations, sure, I'm measured based upon the quality of service, but my tasking is to not scale the organization linearly with people. What I mean by that is like my job is to increase throughput of the system. So let's think, how do you actually measure that? I break up alerts into different classes. You've got commodity malware, you've got suspicious logins, you've got insert class of attack. And then what I'll do is I'll say, hey, over the past month, a typical suspicious login investigation took us like 31 minutes. What would it take to make that 20 minutes? And I'm talking using technology, not, hey, SOC, move faster.
Right, right.
Wrong way to do it. I'm clear to the listeners. What we do is like, we'll actually inspect alerts and investigations and say, okay, what were the steps that we took? What are the right steps we can take? And how do we hand that off to the platform? We call them robots. We've got this robot named Ruxy, and she does all the investigation for us. And then over time, what happens is you increase your throughput. And what we can do then is I can add more customers to the platform with actually out having to increase the number of analysts on the team. So really, in a nutshell, we're like, I'm looking at throughput balanced with latency. Like, is next month when we added a customer or two, did alerts wait longer? Yes or no? Hopefully that's no. And then when we think about throughput, how long it takes us to perform certain classes of investigations, can I make those faster? And again, that's not team move faster. That's how do we hand off more rope to the platform and do more automation to make it easier for folks.
So yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I'm always trying to think how to figure that into capacity planning and everything is grouping different types of alerts. And so it sounds like that's what you're doing, right? Is saying like these type of alerts on average take this much time and these other ones take X and Y and whatever it is and kind of mash that all together and try to come up with the best estimate for all of that.
And one of the other things that we do is if you're working for a vendor, one recommendation is actually talk with folks in sales and ask yourself, well, how many customers are we going to add? Mm. How big are they going to be? And based upon those projections, how much new work do you think is going to show up? And so one of my cheat codes is I actually go and I sales organization and say, what are our sales goals and targets? And what would that mean in terms of net new customers? Mm. And then in my capacity model, it's not here's what's happening in March 2021. I go out 6 to 9, 12 months based upon projections of the business and say, here's how much work is likely to show up. And here's the level of automation and technology that likely needs to be in place for us to be able to deliver high quality service. Mm-hmm. And if you're an internal security program, hey, are we thinking about any acquisitions? Are we thinking about expansion? And if we're thinking about deploying additional agents or additional network appliances, more work will likely show up in your SIM and you could be able to account for those things as well. So I like to project out into the future as well, because basically if I show up to work today and suddenly we're over capacity, it's already too late. It's already too late.
Yep. It's already too late. So when it comes to capacity planning and SLOs and trying to respond as quickly as is necessary for a given organization, how do you approach knowing what fast enough is, right? Like if a customer comes to you and says like, what's the right amount of time we should take to like address an alert, right? Like you said, 30 minutes was the goal, but like, how did you come to that? And is that true for everyone or what might someone do to figure that out for themselves?
I think it's a great question. I looked at that and said, okay, let's start 30 minutes as a good marker. We have this expression, Kentucky windage. It felt right. And I said, you know, if I go to a customer and say, anytime we identify an incident, our goal is to go from alert to fix in under 30 minutes. I think a customer would say, yeah, that sounds good. And the other thing is, I don't want to say it put pressure on the team, but like you have to aspire to hit that less than 5 minutes. How do you do that? Well, when you think about a typical organization, I don't handle every incident the same. What I mean by that is like, I respond differently to targeted attacks than commodity malware on one particular system or a business email compromise involving one attack. If I had to prioritize, I'm going to fix the internet-facing Exchange server at the web show where someone's running post exploitation command versus let me reset that password. That's real talk. So hopefully I want to get to a world where like a critical alert where it's, you know, targeted hands-on keyboard style attack enters the system. We've got automation to pick it up, auto-contain, and then we can make a call as to whether or not release it from containment. I want to push our organization that way as well. My personal opinion is, listen, I don't want to knock critical systems offline for the sake of doing it, but I think sometimes based upon my experiences, my personal experiences, like we're always worried about being really, really right before we take mitigating action. I mean, think about security. It's managing and maintaining acceptable level of risk. Sometimes the right action is to contain that box and then we can learn more about it as well. So bottom line to answer your question is 30 minutes was what felt right. I think for most organizations, the right question to ask isn't where do we want to get to? The first question I'd ask is where are we right now? And that can inform your next steps. Because do you even know? And that's okay. The real value I bring to my day job is asking the questions and just saying, hey, what would it take for us to do alert to fix in 5 minutes? What would it look like? And sometimes the best thing you can do as a security leader is just say, okay, you know, before we ask those questions, how do things work today? What are our SLOs? How long does it take for us to go to alert to fix? Or even basic than that. Hey, when's the last time we spotted commodity malware? Huh. Do we have a business email compromise problem? Okay. What is showed in CS about us on the public internet? And then you can start to use those questions to inform next steps, which will develop a strategy and measurements. And now you're in the playbook of what I do every day.
Yeah, that's awesome. In terms of breaking down like these measurements for SLOs and everything, I love what you said, like, do you know where you are now? Because obviously, like, at least knowing where you are, you know the direction you want to go in, right? Shorter is generally always going to be better. But the way I like to think about, you know, the whole SOC process is decompose it into as many bits as possible and try to measure the individual bits, right? And we're talking like alert triage time generally, right? But I've seen in some of your posts in the past, well, someone's post from Excel, I don't remember if it was yours or someone else's, but mentioning, you know, time to acknowledge the alert, time to take a remediation action, all of those things. What are those key steps within that whole process that you're looking at the times for?
The first part is alert latency. So the way our system works is we integrate with all these different devices, EDR, network, SIM, we've got GuardDuty, all these cloud events, GCP, Azure. We consume those events, normalize them, run through a detection engine, do some enrichment, and make some calls as to whether or not we need human expertise. So the first measurement is when an alert hits our analyst console, how long does it wait? And we've got four severities today. I've got critical, high, medium, and low. And so when a critical alert lands in the queue, the SLO is, I want that first action to be under 5 minutes. It's pretty aggressive. And then from there, it gets less sensitive. 5 minutes, 15 minutes, 2 hours, 6 hours. So I look at SLOs first. This is where it gets a little bit interesting, is in our system, when you're looking at an alert, my personal opinion is there's not two answers, is this bad or not? There's actually three. It's yes, this is evil. No, it's not. But three is I don't know. And that's when we move the alert to an investigation in our world. And what happens there is you're taken out of triage, you're put into this new UI. And in that UI, you record your investigative actions. Like, okay, I've got an EDR alert for a suspicious process. I'm going to look for other process activity on that same system or query enterprise-wide. Or maybe I'm going to jump into my SIM and do this and do that. And all of those things are recorded within the investigation. And so what I'm looking at within investigations is cycle times. What's cycle time? Like, okay, when we move that EDR alert to an investigation, how long did it take us to arrive at the conclusion of, yes, this is a thing, or no, I know enough about this to make a call? So I've got SLOs, how long did it wait? And then cycle times for how long does it take us to perform these classes of investigation as well? Now, if that investigation becomes an incident, we toggle the investigation as an incident. Now I'm saying, how long is it taking us to scope it? Like, you know, is it just on this system or other systems? Is the attacker logging into one mailbox or several? And I'm measuring like incident response cycle times now as well. So basically, the easiest way to think about it is we've got latency sensitivity, how long does work wait, cycle times, when we start the work, how long does it take for us to do it, which is a proxy to get throughput. Now, how quickly can we process work across the system as well? And again, just for listeners, this is not so I'm like, hey, we need to move faster when we jump into the sim, we need to do that. No, when we're looking at the steps we're taking, I'm asking myself, hey, what can we automate? Because you know what, like, you know what computers are really good at is taking a list of steps and then executing those, you know, in the way that they intended. And then what happens over time, John, is my investigation cycle times, that line, instead of going up and to the right, like every investor likes, they go down because you're becoming more efficient and more effective. Sorry, I'm really passionate about this, because what happens and what you're doing is you're becoming more efficient and effective. But what you're doing, the byproduct of that is you're decreasing cognitive loading on your SOC analysts. Because they're focused on making the decision rather than, oh God, I got to go do this, I got to do it that, just to have an informed answer. And now you're optimizing the team for two things at that point, making really good decisions and then interacting with either your internal stakeholders, if you're an internal SOC, or your customers, if you're a vendor as well. Sorry. Apologies for the long-winded answer. This is something I'm deeply passionate about as well. Nice. On the back end, we do a lot with data science. I think one of the smart things I did when I stepped into a position of management or leadership was like, embracing operations management, learning things like time series analysis, change point detection. And these aren't fancy things, but these are just what I call, like, when you're an investigator in your tool bag, I've got like NCASE and FDK, and I've got maybe some PCAP. But as a manager, I've got data science, I've got Jupyter notebooks, and I've got all these techniques to understand what's happening in my system as well. So it's just like you get to apply that investigative mindset. But instead of looking for bad guys, I'm looking at ways to optimize the system, and I love it. So, you know, sorry to go on a tangent there. Just something.
No, it's amazing. I'm a geek about that stuff too. So I love it. In terms of change point detection, for example, let's pull that thread. What is that, and how can SOX look to use that as an idea to make things better, detect, you know, changes that are important, all that kind of stuff?
Yeah. So I've got this saying. I want to throw on a t-shirt one day. When you want to up-level like a junior security analyst, what do? You sit them next to a senior analyst, right? But if you want to up-level your management team, like security operations, sit them next to data scientists. One of the benefits for who I sit next to at day job is I sit next to a data scientist. And I think the business did it intentionally. They literally sat us next to each other.
Probably.
Literally. And I guarantee they did it. Or maybe I said, I want to sit there because this person knows a lot more than I do in this area. But I think they did it intentionally. And one of the things I said to the data scientist, Elizabeth Weber, I just said, hey, Elizabeth, I'm looking at just general alert trends in our SOC, and I'm looking at a time series. So just visualization of how many alerts we're sending to the team over time, summarized like day over day. And she said, hey, John, have you heard of this thing called change point detection or change point analysis? I'm like, no, no idea what that is. And it's basically at a high level, it allows you to determine changes in the mean number of alerts you're sending to the team over time. So basically, it's just, you know, it's a fancy way of saying, hey, when I look back 7 or 14 days, did we experience a statistically significant shift in terms of the number of alerts we're sending to the team? And it will go up or will go down. So change point detection allows me to look at, okay, did the daily mean number of expel alerts, alerts we're sending to the team for review, did that go up or down? If it goes up, why? What happened there? Did we onboard a new customer? Did we integrate with new technology? If it goes down, also being able to answer that as well. So change point analysis in the context of alerts allows you to answer, did the daily mean number of alerts you're sending to your team go up or down? To take it a step back, when you think about moving alerts to investigations, we do the same thing with investigations. Did the mean number of investigations we start to perform go up or down over a given period of time as well? So just a quick, easy way to use change point detection to determine, like, did the daily mean number of alerts we're sending to the team change?
Say it goes up, right? There's a ton of variables that could have caused that, right? More attacks just happening that week, change in signatures, change in something, right? How do you narrow down? And is there an automatic way or an easy way to identify what caused that change?
The thing is, you know, with my management team, it's, hey, we just detected a change in the daily mean number of alerts we're sending to the team. We have to get after it to answer, like, what's this variance from? And it could be, most often it's a runaway or bad signature or update. So vendor releases new rule. We've all been there. Things kind of run away from us a bit. That's going to happen. And the other thing, if working for a vendor, it's, did we onboard any new customers? Are we consuming a lot more data? And what will that mean? And then, of course, things like the weeks we've had these past couple of weeks, things have been busy, a lot of exploits, explainable cause there. But typically, did we have a bad set of signatures or signature? Are we onboarding more customers? Or are things just in a really bad state now because there's a lot of exploits out there, so on and so forth. So, and then corrective action would be, okay, did we suppress or filter or dial in those runaway signatures? When we look at new customers or maybe new organizations or satellite offices we've onboarded, can we dial them in? How do we tune them down in a way where we're like, we're looking at the things that matter and not just being flooded with false positives or benign activity as well? So great question, because it's not just spotting that there is a change point detection. It's really the value is now, what are you doing about it as well?
Right. Yeah. Yep. One of the things I walked onto there, a bad signature, right? How do you define a bad signature? And the bigger question, I guess, is looking at a list of thousands of signatures. When you look week over week at all of the signatures that did fire, which ones are you focusing on to tune? And is it, percentage of times they're wrong, count of times they're wrong? Like, there's a whole bunch of ways you can approach that. How do you take on that problem?
I think we're all trying to solve this. And I think we all kind of come at this very different ways, which is totally fine right now. I focus on, probably doesn't surprise you, like the basics. What I do is we use a third-party technology called Datadog that does some platform monitoring, think like SRE type things. Mm-hmm. And what I'll do is I'll fire a notification to the team anytime a given rule or signature exceeds an acceptable threshold. How does that look like in practice? Oh, it's topical. Well, yesterday, I think Qualys agent started scanning for some post-exploitation things on Microsoft Exchange. CrowdStrike Falcon exploded, meaning tons of alerts across multiple customers. So what we'll do is we'll fire a notification. Someone within our detection and response engineering function will spot that and say, we've got to dial this in really, really quickly. So that's more of the day-to-day tactical operations. But week over week, what we look at is probably what you expect. Give me my top talkers by vendor, by signature, and then we'll do some things to dial those in. But one of the things we've built into our platform, which is really helpful, is we've got this concept of what we call, like, we actually have a tuning queue. And what happens there is, you imagine you're integrating with all this technology. And the other question I'd be asking is, like, how do you account for when a vendor releases new signatures? What do you do with those? Do you have to write new rules? Like, we actually have a piece of technology that allows us to say, okay, anytime an alert fires in a customer environment for the first time, send it to a SOC analyst for review to say, is this evil or not? Number two, let's make a call as to whether or not we want to put this into production so we keep looking at those things. So we actually made a good call a number of years ago and say, we've got this tuning for a scene concept. And anytime there's a new vendor alert that fires in an organization for the first time, we send it up as an alert to say, okay, we have to look at this. Is this evil or not? But if it's not, let's make a call as to whether or not we should put this into a production severity, meaning we're putting it in front of the SOC team again and again.
We'll be back after a quick break.
If you're enjoying this episode, then you're undoubtedly interested in building the strongest security operations team that you can. For those who want to go even deeper, did you know that SANS has not one, but two courses that cover security operations centers as well? For the leaders, managers, and directors out there, my co-author Mark Orlando and I offer 551, Building and Leading Security Operations Centers. This course covers building your team, your physical and virtual workspace, getting the right data into your tools, and then focusing on security priorities through everyday execution of important security tasks and building the best SOC team possible. For the technical practitioners out there, my course Sec 450, Blue Team Fundamentals, Security Operations and Analysis is designed to cover everything you need to jump in being the best SOC analyst that you can be. We cover important data types, SOC tools, security logs, malware, analysis technique, automation, and much, much more. In addition, if you want to prove you can deliver the best on any security team, both courses have an accompanying certification available from GIAC. That's the GSOM for 551 and the GSOC for 450. Check out both courses and free demos available on the SANS website. You can get registered today for an in-person course at one of our many events, or go to On Demand and take either class anywhere at your own pace. Thanks for listening. Tuning queue thing, that's a really interesting concept. Could you go a little further into, like, what else goes in there other than things that are, first time seen and all that, which is obviously an interesting factor? What else would get something put in that list and prioritized?
that's mainly what goes in there for now. But you can imagine there's a good amount of alerts that fire on a typical day for that. So on a typical day, we'll get anywhere from 25 to 50 tuning alerts, because Carbon Black Response wrote a new threat feed thing, or Signal Science released a new signature, or Palo Alto Networks just released those exploit vulnerability signatures for the latest MS Exchange activity. They'll fire there. So it's a catch-all. So if we don't already have logic built into our detection engine, it's a catch-all way just to make sure that we don't miss. So it's a fail open concept. The easiest way to think about it, it's a fail open concept, which gives us a lot of flexibility. So if you're working with, a customer or someone, like, how do you know? Well, we've got this fail open concept built into our platform.
One of the other things you'd mentioned was Jupyter Notebooks. I wanted to touch on those as well. That's one of those, I don't know, technologies, I guess would be the word, that I've been eyeing and saying, like, this is obviously a big thing coming, but I don't know where exactly it fits into security, although I hope that it, turns into use case management and threat hunting. And it sounds like you're already doing that from blog posts I've seen in the past. Yeah. I'd be curious to know how effective you found using Jupyter Notebooks to manage that kind of data is. And I guess we should probably start with how are you doing it and what's kind of going on there? And then how does it work?
Yeah, one of my other strong beliefs is, like, management today is living in the world of Excel and spreadsheets. I also believe, 5 to 10 years from now, most managers will be living in Jupyter Notebooks or Notable, whatever. So we use Jupyter Notebook in many different ways. But I'll talk about from the security operations management perspective first. There's also some threat hunting aspects as well. So in our platform, we said early on, we got to instrument really good APIs, because that's how it allows us to kind of read and consume data. So every week at Thursday afternoon, I'll hop into my Jupyter Notebook and run my set of operational metrics. That's how I actually calculate wait times, my SLO times, and calculate investigation cycle time. So basically, we use Jupyter Notebooks. It reads a set of APIs from our analyst platform. And that's where we create a lot of our operational metrics. So it's does the calculation, does the presentation, and we use that for reporting and to drive strategic change. So a lot of our operations management is built around Jupyter Notebooks today.
Very cool. With the ones that you've used for threat hunting, how have you found managing those? And one of the things that I was thinking about, I'm hoping also that the future goes in that direction, because I've seen the power of Jupyter in other use cases, but don't see a ton of it in security, except kind of on the leading kind of edge of where people are going. Python, right? It's a thing that's not, at least historically, like a primary skill for a lot of SOC analysts. People have been more focused on, I need to know how to read PCAPs and log files and whatever. And if you know Python, that's awesome and it's great, but not everyone knows it. Has that been any kind of hindrance? Are you teaching people Python? Or I guess you can use anything, but I'm guessing using Python. How has that played out for you?
We actually have an analytics engineer that reports directly to me. So I can work with that person to say, hey, Moore, I've got an interesting concept of a thing we've got to measure. Can you kind of go put it together? But on the team, we have a lot of folks that know object-oriented programming. So I've got a backup. But I think my strategy there is, let me hire someone specifically that can own this particular capability. And if you're a SOC manager out there listening, I think if you can make that an investment, it's well worth it. Because then you can say, hey, I've got an idea for a thing I'd like to measure. What would that look like? And how it works today is I get with Moore. And I say, hey, I got an interesting idea. If we measured this, it may lead to some new learnings about this thing. And then Moore goes out and builds it for me. And then we look at the data and go. But the strategy that I've used is hire someone specifically who's got that background and experience.
Gotcha. One of the other things I wanted to touch on was the interplay of quality investigation and speed, right? And how they're kind of opposing forces. Obviously, you've kind of already touched on, like, we want to speed up the things that we can speed up responsibly. But for the stuff that people are doing manually, that's still a human-driven kind of analysis task, is there a way that you found, and how do you measure quality on that sort of thing?
Measuring quality in a SOC, I'll give you some background in terms of how we got to the point where we are now. Is early on our journey at Expel, is we said, okay, we got to make sure that as we scale, that quality comes along with us. And in fact, as we scale, we want quality to improve. So my boss at the time, Matt Peters, he's now the chief product officer. He's like, John, you're going to build a quality program in the SOC, and I'm going to give you some guiding principles. And he said, I'm going to look over here so I make sure I get him right. He says, John, when you measure quality in the SOC, we're going to sample. The sample has to be representative of the population. That's Matt's fancy speak of saying, hey, whatever we sample must be representative of the actual thing that we're doing. Measurements of the sample need to be accurate and precise. and the metrics we produce need to be digestible. He's like, John, get after it. And at first I said, I have no idea what he's talking about. Because I was like, okay, thanks, man. I appreciate the help, man. And what I had to do is actually learn what quality control was. So I was actually looking at ISOs of manufacturing industry saying, okay, TLDR, here's kind of how I think about it today, is you've got quality. And you've got two buckets. You've got quality assurance, which is all the things that you do as part of your process to make sure that when the thing leaves the door, either you're, you know, handing the deliverable to your executive or you're interacting with a customer, that you're taking steps to check to make sure that the thing is of high quality, it's accurate and precise, so on and so forth. And then you've got quality control, which was new to me. And quality control is basically, what are we doing to randomly inspect all the things that we've already made decisions on, like the alerts we've already triaged, the investigations that are already completed, the incidents that are already done? What are we doing to inspect those to ensure that, you know, we did the thing that we thought we were going to do? And then I said, okay, we've got a lot of quality assurance already built into our process today, meaning like before anything goes out to the customer, we're going to do some peer review. I've got a bunch of monitors and alerts that go off when certain events happen. We talked about those threshold monitors, blah, blah, blah. But I actually said, oh man, we're actually not doing anything quality control wise because we're not going back in time to inspect the work that we've already done. And I got to that point. And then I said, I did a whole bunch of research on this and landed on these ISOs in the manufacturing industry that are called acceptable quality limits. And basically, it's like, imagine if you're a manufacturing organization and you ship widgets, like, and let's say you do 500 a day. AQL or that particular ISO is going to say, okay, if you're shipping 500 widgets, you better look at like 25 to make sure that the quality is good. And when you look at the quality of those things, you have a check sheet and you're just checking off. And the analogy to think about is like, you know, when you go get your state inspection, you know, they're pulling up and they're like, does this have seat belts and does the brake lights work? So on and so forth. And so I said, that's an interesting concept. What would that look like within the context of security operations? So we built a Jupyter notebook, surprise. And we said, okay, we're going to use acceptable quality limits in these manufacturing industries. And to go full circle on you now, we're going to use change point detection to determine how many expel alerts we look on a typical day. We're going to use change point detection to determine how many investigations we look. Those will be the inputs I put on my AQL table, which inform how many things I should be looking at. And then when I look at my alerts, I'm going to take them through a check sheet. And my investigation is the same thing. And I'm going to count the number of defects. And the number of defects trended over time will be the metrics that we send back to the organization. So then I've got a nice time series of the number of defects in my SOC over time. And if you're wondering, like, any interesting observations, it's probably what you expect, John. It's like, when I have new analysts join the team, my quality goes like this. It's, you know, but once they've been on the team for a little bit, quality gets back under control as well. So that's how we think about quality today. Where I want to get to, and this is kind of goes back to investigation quality, is like, we talked about like a suspicious login investigation. And when you investigate a suspicious login, I bet you it's comprised of like, and I looked at the user's a previous login activity, and I looked at their role, and then did they use a VPN? I want to be able to say, okay, Jupyter, I want you to go out and grab me investigations for suspicious logins that don't include certain actions, because now you're not meeting my quality mark because you're skipping steps now. Because I can programmatically say, hey, Jupyter, we did 30 investigations yesterday. Give me 7. And of those, give me them from suspicious logins where we didn't do these sets of things, because now you've got the makings of something that could be poor in quality. The other intelligence we'll put into the notebook is, and I also want to grab alerts or investigations from folks that are newer on the team because they just don't have the experience. And again, that's not to discredit what they're doing, right? If you go get your, you know, car worked on, you probably want the guy working on that's been there for longer than a year, not the guy, it's his first day if they're working on your brakes, right? You know, so on and so forth. So we'll include analyst tenure into our inspection, not because we're looking to discredit, but it's like, hey, you're new here, and we want to make sure we're here to help as well. So that's the story of quality control in our SOC here today. So it's been a journey.
Very cool. I love the kind of cross, category or whatever you want to call it, cross-discipline kind of approach to saying like, well, who else has this problem and how do they approach it, right? And taking that manufacturing knowledge. And I have engineering in my background, so that's something that kind of speaks to me as well. It's a really cool approach. I like one of the things you mentioned about defects is looking for the lack of an action having been taken or whatever. Is that to say that when you're looking to measure defects, you are looking for maybe a skip in a playbook step or something like that? And if so, you know, is that something you could just say, well, you have to do these steps, otherwise you can't close the alert? And also, what other types of defects would you be looking for? Is there anything else?
Yeah, I think the first obvious one, are we skipping steps? And when we look at that, we'll say, okay, we're going to count it as a defect. But again, we're not counting defects for the sake of just counting them. We're asking ourselves, well, does it make sense to skip this step? Can we use the defect count to inform an evolution to how we investigate this activity as well? So that's important. The other things that we look for is simple things like remediation actions. You know, we think about incidents. Did we provide the right remediation actions either to the organization? That's super important when you think about it. Like, I've got a system infected with commodity malware, but I told you to contain the host, but maybe I didn't tell you to block the command and control IP address in the domains. Like, now we're not doing all the things that we need to do to kind of truly mitigate risk as well. It really comes down to investigative steps and investigative processes. Like, are we following process? And then the quality of what we're doing, do the outputs make sense? Meaning, like, did we, when we identified root cause of that incident, was it the actual reason, or were we just populating anything just to, like, check that box as well? You know, did we tell them it was an infected USB drive? It was a macro enabled work doc. Those details really matter. So we're inspecting for that as well. But we're also inspecting for, are there signs that someone just isn't getting it? And not because we're trying to identify it, we're also looking for training opportunities, if that makes sense. Like, hey, I was looking at these investigative actions, so on and so forth. I'll be real, it doesn't seem like we've got a good grasp on that in the SOC. Can we launch a training on AWS guard duty, for example? So on and so forth. So we're always looking, we're also looking for opportunities to up-level the team as well through those quality checks.
One of the other topics you mentioned early on that I wanted to make sure we hit before we run out of time was burnout. Teach classes to, you know, students from SOCs all over the world. And I get a whole variety of experience from, I love it, it's the greatest, to my job is terrible, right? And burnout's a very real thing, obviously, for everyone that's worked in a SOC. We've all seen that kind of thing and the potential for that. In your experience, what are some of the drivers of burnout, and how does, you know, your way of thinking here and looking at quality and automation and kind of all of that approach some of those drivers and hopefully eliminate them as much as possible?
Yeah, when I think about the folks that we're looking to bring onto our team, first off, at more entry level, I value traits way more than skills. And traits are who you are, and skills are what you know how to do. And the folks that we hire, the traits that I look for is curiosity, candor, passion for learning. Notice I didn't say passion for security, a passion for learning and a capacity for knowledge. And what that will get us is folks that can come in, learn things very fast. They're curious about all those things, so on and so forth. So to prevent analyst burnout within the team that I run, it's really funny. I believe that our service quality is commensurate with the quality of the SOC analyst role. Meaning, like, if you're showing up to work all day, you're like, this is legit. I look at alerts that matter, and the things I'm looking at, they actually change because, you know, we've solved that. Now we're going to go focus on this other thing. I think that's where you want to be. If I had to categorize burnout, I'd say you show up every day, you're doing the same thing. Management doesn't know how bad it is. Oh my gosh, we don't embrace technology. It's just the same thing over and over again, and nobody hears me. And as a result, I think, like, the burnout is I'm not learning, I'm not growing, and I'm looking around. I'm ready to go somewhere else where I can learn. And at least that's been my experience. So the way we design the socket we have today, it's like when we think about the business objectives, I need to scale this thing. We need to look at, you know, improving investigation cycle times. Well, to do that, the job is always changing a little bit. You know, like today you may be handling commodity malware, but we're going to automate that. So the next time your emphasis is going to be focusing on, you know, targeted attacks. We got to mitigate things early on with ransomware. We've automated that. We've taken care of it. And as a result, you look back and reflect and you say, wow, like, I'm growing and I'm learning and I like it here. And I think the burnout is just doing the same thing over and over and over again. And you're like, hey, I got into security because I love to learn. I don't feel like I'm learning. So that's where I think a lot of the burnout that I've heard about or even experienced earlier in my career came down to, like, I'm not learning and growing. And I think if we're doing our jobs as security leaders, we're evolving how we're operating again and again and again. I even look back to how we thought about the security analyst role at Expel in, like, 2016. It's very different. Like, alerts would hit the queue and be like, okay, what do we do? But now it's literally alert hits queue, robot picks it up. Do I need to do anything? Okay, blah, blah, blah. And then how do I actually, you know, write some additional workflows to program said robots? And I think if we're constantly improving every single day, we're doing our jobs. And if when we do that, the security analysts are going to be really happy. that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would have answered that question almost identically. I got some presentations out there over the past couple of years where I talk about like variety is like the big word I always try to ingrain in people's heads when I explain my experience and my kind of way of eliminating burnout is like, are you doing the same thing every day? Yeah. Are the things you're doing automatable? You probably hate your job. If not, then you probably come into work excited about doing something new every day, right? Which I assume most people like.
Yeah. And listen, I think there's real value in learning that like the manual steps. Oh, this alert fired. We're going to go grab that data. I'm going to do it manually, like once, maybe twice. Mm-hmm. But if I'm going to take those steps every time, let's automate that. And then again, you know, that principle of ask the question, well, what would it take for us not to have to involve a human for this? Let's talk about that. And then now we're freeing up mental capacity there to focus on the next problem. And that's where people get really excited. At least that's where it gets me excited as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as they say, right? If you've done it twice, you should have automated it once. that's it's a tongue-in-cheek saying. But yeah, there's some truth to that, right? As soon as you find yourself like, I could have automated this, right? You start to hate that task. And then it just grows into this kind of like resentment of doing that thing and your job and everything. And it just kind of poisons stuff. So yeah, I mean, automation is obviously a huge play in there. To wrap it up, final question, is there any particular topic or kind of new technology or I guess question you're struggling with right now that's, you know, the next thing in security and you know, the future of where this kind of discipline is going?
I don't want to say I'm struggling, but the next big challenge I've got to break through, it may be specific to the organization I'm working in, but complexity and managing that, because we integrate with a lot of different technology, and I'm trying to make sure that we're reducing complexity. And when we reduce complexity, we reduce cognitive loading, so on and so forth. It's just managing like some of those subtle differences between all the security technology and the market. And I really want to abstract that away. You know, I love that Endgame does a little thing different than CrowdStrike Falcon. Cool. Love it. But how do I abstract that in a way so the way we respond to EDR alerts is just one way rather than, we've got to account for these nuances for this thing, so on and so forth. But what's interesting is when you think about those products competing, they want to have these little features that are a little bit different. So one of the things I really focused on this year is abstracting that away to reduce complexity in our particular platform. But there may be a problem specific to, you know, where we are in the journey at Expel.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a pretty generalizable problem, right? No one likes writing one-off solutions to deal with individual products. And if we could, you know, standardization is a big thing, right? In InfoSec, you know, MITRE ATT&CK's huge because it's like we can use the same language to talk about stuff. And if we could deal with our tools in an automated way, I agree that'd be total game changer. So hopefully we get there someday. To wrap it up, a two-piece question here, because we've talked about a lot of kind of cross-discipline stuff. First, are there any resources that you have read that have kind of informed your view on this stuff that we could point listeners to?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a book. It's called Statistical Process Control for Managers. I believe it's the second edition. What that's going to teach you is what questions do you have to ask to be able to answer? Let's take alert management as a process. Is it in a state of control? Or is it complete chaos? And how do you know? And you'll learn the fun things like what's a Shuart control chart? Read it, maybe a little bit dry for some of your audience. That's cool. But I promise you, it's worth the time. The other book that I'd highly recommend, it's a book called The Goal by Dr. Eli Goldratt. It teaches you the theory of constraints. And that's system level thinking, because if you work in security operations, fun fact, you're managing a system. And what that teaches you is how to spot bottlenecks. Like we talked about some security metrics, you know, where's the friction today? How do I actually exploit that to optimize that? And then what really good managers are able to do is predict where the next bottleneck is going to be. Oh, I know when we fix this, this is going to be messed up. And then we're going to have to go do that. And then when we do that, it's going to be this thing. And like, that's really the value I bring to my day job is saying, this is our problem today. We're going to do that. And then this is going to be your next problem, but we're already thinking about it ahead of time. So those are two really, really good books. And time series analysis, the basics, what's a trend, what's a residual, what's seasonality. We've got some blogs on the Expel site if you're interested. And just the basics of operations management, capacity modeling, those things matter. And I know I love it when we promote like, you know, senior security analysts into management and you've got to learn management. But fun fact, you're also in operations management now. So here you go, are some new tools to learn as well. So those are probably my best recommendations right now.
Very cool. Thank you. And then also, where can we find your stuff and continue to follow you online?
Yeah, that's great. So I'm on Twitter, Jay Hensinski. And then also, we've got a number of blogs that I've written on the Expel website, expel.io/blog. You know, check us out.
All right. Thank you very much, John Nasinski, for joining us on the Blueprint Podcast. Ton of awesome, actionable information here and some great takeaways for listeners. So I think people are really going to enjoy it. So thank you for coming on.
John, this is great. Thank you so much. I had a lot of fun.
Hey, Blue Teamers. I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Blueprint. If you've got a second and want to help support the podcast, please subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. It would be really, really meaningful to us. And if you have any ideas or suggestions, I would love to hear them. Your reviews are going to be one of the best ways to help others find this podcast, so anything you could do would be a big help. As always, thank you for listening. You can connect to me on social at SecHub, SecHubb on Twitter, or on LinkedIn. So until next time, thank you for listening to the Blueprint Podcast.